My first guest this morning is here to help us clear up some of this misinformation out there about pelvic mesh surgery. Well, Dr. Dmitry Nikolovsky is an assistant professor of urology at Upstate Medical University, and he specializes in male and female reconstructive urology. And he was here a bit ago, and we were talking about kind of the overview of what takes place with some of the work he does in reconstruction with women. So I thought we'd start out by just talking about, what is female pelvic reconstruction? What is it that you do?
We mentioned last time that pelvic organ prolapse is actually very common in women. Some studies show that there's probably 40% of American women have the pelvic organ prolapse.
Which means that their internal organs in their pelvis are basically sagging. Is that the issue?
Some people describe it as a bulge.
Or a bulge, okay.
It's a bulge. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Most of the time it's found just on the routine physical exam, and women are not aware of this. By itself, it's not dangerous. It's very common, and not everybody needs to have a surgery. The papers show that only about 10 to 11% of women have a risk of pelvic reconstruction in their lifetime, either for incontinence or for pelvic organ prolapse or both.
What is the pelvic organ? First of all, I know it is often as a result of childbearing and all of the stuff that goes around delivering babies, all the pressure and stress. But what are the results of pelvic organ prolapse? What happens? Is it, again, an incontinence issue where you can't control your urine output?
I treat it as two different problems, but maybe sometimes walking hand in hand. In general, it's just a relaxation of pelvic support from maybe repeated trauma of the childbearing or the actual delivery. And sometimes it's unrelated to this. Sometimes it could be just chronic cough, increasing intra-abdominal pressure, or from a professional exposure. Maybe somebody lifts heavy objects all day long.
So it could be occupational, too.
It could be. And also it's common in, let's say, smokers. It's more common than non-smokers. So it's probably something related to the supportive tissue that is weakened mechanically or biochemically or both. And just because it's found on a routine physical exam, if it's asymptomatic, it doesn't mean that it's something dangerous and need to be fixed. On the other hand, somebody comes with urgency, frequency, complain of a bulge in a vaginal area that needs to be addressed, and these are the candidates at least to talk about surgery.
Okay.
Other options.
So you know, with pelvic reconstruction, there are many different several different approaches. And this, tell us then, why someone would use mesh or why they would not use mesh first?
The idea of mesh actually came from general surgery. For years, for hundreds of years, people are trying to treat hernia, abdominal hernia, inguinal hernia, with tissue repairs, basically reapproximating, putting back together your own tissue with stitches. And for hundreds of years, it was unsuccessful. And the reason is you're trying to put weak tissue that was torn in the first place back together with tension. So surgeons came up with the idea of tension-free repair. And a polypropylene mesh was used to basically bridge the gap and create tension-free repair. And it's very successful in general surgery. So when gynecologists, urogynecologists, urologists thought about pelvic organ prolapse, basically it's a hernia in the pelvic region. The idea came, substitute those native tissue repair, your own tissue repair, that were not very successful. I believe success rate of native tissue repair is between 40% and 60%, depending on the definition of what you consider success. That's a controversial topic by itself. So unsatisfied with the native tissue repair.
Meaning using your own tissue.
Your own tissue under tension, put in some stitches and hoping it will heal in the proper location. Researchers tried to place. At first, it was a mesh that you cut individually to reduce the prolapse. But then this technique was adapted, and kits came out. So it's a pre-cut mesh with all the instruments and materials put together in the kit for ease and comfort of the surgeon. And it became a very popular, and it was even labeled as easy surgery.
So it was used very widely.
It was
for a while.
It was used widely. So the same mesh is used for sling procedures, which are for incontinence. And bigger piece of mesh is used for prolapse repair. Sometimes they're done together, and sometimes if a woman has only one of these problems, only one piece of mesh is used.
So what's the bottom line here? What's wrong with the mesh? Why has it caused all these problems?
At first, reports started coming out that infrequent but serious complications occurred when people use mesh for pelvic organ prolapse or for incontinence.
What kind of complications?
The complications are subdivided into the three types, but they're commonly lumped together as one. Erosion is exposure of the mesh into the urinary tract, which is kind of difficult to treat because you have to remove the mesh and reconstruct the urinary tract. Exposures are basically the suture line that you just closed, put in the mesh in. Suture line probably came apart, and now you can see the mesh through your incision, which probably is not property of the mesh. Mesh didn't just unravel the sutures. And extrusion is when mesh is exposing through the vaginal mucosa, not at the place where you made your incision, but probably where you made a dissection, maybe a little bit thinner than you wished, and now you could see the mesh in another area.
So these were surgical complications that followed the use of mesh. Did they create dangerous situations for the patient?
Infections followed because it's a foreign body now exposed to the urinary tract or vaginal flora or both. And these meshes are pretty large and they track deep into the pelvis. So the problems are that it's very difficult to remove them. It's relatively easy to place them, we thought, but very difficult to remove them once the scar tissue settled and some of the parts of the mesh we can't even get to.
So they really can create a lot of difficulty. And I guess the question is, are there times when you still think that that's a viable means of treatment? And in your experience, have you seen, in other words, is it a matter of really a case-by-case or individual basis upon which you make the decision as to whether to use this type of thing? Or should no one ever use mesh again? I don't want to run out of time here.
I don't believe that mesh is evil. It's like any other instrument or material. But you always have to select a proper candidate. And in the climate right now, a lot of people are shied away from even using the mesh. But there are proper candidates. With a proper discussion with the patient, it could be a great option for some.
Thank you so much for clarifying this. I really appreciate your coming back in and talking to us about it. My guest has been Dr. Dmitry Nikolovsky, and he is a specialist in female and male reconstructive urology at Upstate. Stay right there. We'll be right back after this short break.